Individuals with a variety of backgrounds and beliefs, and we are a welcoming congregation to be a resident of bisexual individuals. I'm Nancy Schrockmeyer, the president, waiting in service, and any guests or visitors will have an opportunity later in service for introductions. And we have our challenge waiting next. This existence of ours is as transient as autumn clouds. To watch the birth and death of beings is like looking at the movements of a dance. A lifetime is like a flash of lightning in the sky, rushing by like a torrent down a steep mountain. Welcome to Prairie's second annual All Souls Day service. We're going to begin with a responsive reading at 6:46 in the blue hymnal. The words are by a Kentucky poet, Wallace Berry. And Wallace Berry, for two decades, had meditative walks on the Sabbath, and he wrote poems wherever they walk. It's in a wonderful book called Timber Choir. These are his words on the larger circle. We clasp the hands of those that go before us.
And the hands of those who come after us.
We enter the little circle of each other's arms.
And the larger circle of lovers whose hands are joined in theirs.
And and the larger circle of all creatures.
As he came out of life, moved also in advance.
To a music so subtle and vast that no ear hears it.
Except in the fragments.
We'll have our children's story, but by the way, the book, because many of you will find it familiar. When my children were little, we were using this book in Unitarian Sunday School. It's called From Long Ago in Many Lands. Inside the cover, many languages say, under the sky, all men are family. You can read that as all people are family. The story is the mustard seed medicine. Kisa Gotami was a beautiful young woman who lived in India. A rich young man fell in love with her, and after a while they were married. When a baby boy was born to them, they were very happy, and the mother loved the little boy very much. In time, he grew taller, he began to walk and to run. But one day, he became very sick, and in spite of all that his parents could do for him, he died. Kisa Gotami could not believe her little boy was dead. She thought he was only sleeping, and that it was a sickness that had made him go to sleep, and that some kind of medicine would surely make him well. So she took the little body in her arms, and she went to her neighbor. "Please, my friend, give me some medicine that will make my baby well." The neighbor shook her head. She knew there was no medicine that could cure him. All the neighbors felt sorry for her. Finally, a man said to her, "I cannot give you medicine, but I know someone who can help you. Go to Buddha. He can always help people." So she hurried to the home of Buddha, and she begged him for some medicine that would cure her child. Buddha knew that the child was dead, and he knew that he could not bring the little boy back to life. But he knew that he could help the mother to feel peaceful and comforted. "You must help me to find the medicine," said Buddha kindly. "Go and bring me a handful of mustard seed from a family where no one has died." Kisa Gotami thanked Buddha. Mustard seed was so common, she knew that she could find it. So she returned home and laid the little lifeless body on his bed, and she went out alone to find a family in which no one had ever died. She went first to her sympathetic neighbors. They were glad to give her mustard seed, but when she told them that it must be from a family in which no one had died, each one sighed and said something like, "Oh, have you forgotten? Our grandfather died here in our home just a year ago. We still miss him." So she went to other houses, and eventually she went even to strangers, and the answer was always the same. "I'll be glad to give you mustard seed, but our dear son died here 10 years ago. But we still miss him very much." One person said, "Good woman, why do you remind us of our sorrows? How could you expect to find a home where no one has ever died? Don't you know that the living are few, but the dead are many?" At last, tired and discouraged, Kisa Gotami went outside the village and sat down on a rock under a banyan tree. She knew now that even Buddha had no medicine for her child. Nothing would bring him back to life again. Tears blinded her eyes. But as she sat under the banyan tree and thought, she slowly began to feel peaceful. She was not alone and deserted, nor did she feel that her little boy was all alone. The really real little boy she loved was gone. That was true. She knew now that his body was dead. It had died just as thousands of other people's
bodies had died before, just as her own body would someday die, just as everybody in all the world must someday die. Mrs. O'Donnelly felt that all people were together in dying. No one was ever all alone. She wanted to talk to Buddha again, for she was beginning to understand why he sent her to get the handful of mustard seed. He invited her to sit down near him. Our lives in this world are all short, whether we live for 1 year or for 100 years. Everyone who is born must someday die. We all have our times of happiness and also our times of pain and sadness. Do not try to free yourself from suffering. Try rather to free yourself from hate and selfishness. Do not struggle. Be at peace. Accept your life as a gift. Take the days as they come, one by one. Fill them as full of kindness as you can. Mr. Gautami went often to Buddha. The thoughts that he gave her to think about were the best kind of medicine for her loneliness. Now that she knew how much it hurt to be lonely, she began to learn how to comfort others who also were sad. Mr. Gautami, a rich man's wife, went often to the home of the poor. She brought them food. She played with their children. In these ways, she slowly learned how to comfort herself. Our hymn is number 17 in the blue hymnal.
There's nothing in this world that will always remain.
abstract, the things that we can see and touch. Everything's in constant flux. So when we think about that and meditate about it, it encourages us to be able to let go of clinging. Because in the Buddhist point of view, the clinging to phenomena is a lot of what causes us pain. We all come into this world and we want to find security, we want to feel happy, and so we look for things to cling to get a sense that we're safe and we're secure. But all of the phenomena are constantly fluctuating, so we're frustrated because we find something wonderful and then it seems to dissolve in our hands. The Buddha had a very realistic view about life, and some people have said that it's a gloomy religion because they talk about suffering rather than trying to ignore the fact that there's suffering in our lives. The Buddhist tradition looks directly at the suffering that we all share, and as the story indicated, by realizing that we're all in this together, that we all suffer loss, and that we all will have things that don't go well, it somehow makes the burden feel much lighter. I think modern science kind of shows us the truth of the non-substantiality of everything. Because you look in the electron microscope and you see a lot of space and energy, but there really isn't anything real solid. And also when you think about it, all of us in this room who are here, in 100 years, none of us will be in this form any longer. Together we walk through life and try to comfort each other. In Buddhism, there's a lot of emphasis on meditation and mindfulness. And in a meditative state, you let your thoughts go, and you let your attachment to things go, and you find something that is beyond the temporal. It's a state of being that's beyond your thoughts and your possessions and all of that. And it turns out that when you go beyond these things that keep us busy all the time in our small minds, there's a wonderful, comforting presence there. And we all have it inside. It's like your divine nature, or what in Buddhism they call Buddha mind. So I'm going to lead a meditation, and together maybe we can just touch on this realm a little bit. Sometimes we forget how much we have. we entered this life alone from a place we can't recall. We all seek happiness and we try to avoid pain. Sometimes, though, along with the joys of our life, we also experience misfortune. Our loved ones leave us through death or through abandonment or other circumstances. We have other losses, maybe a job that we don't want. Maybe the loss of our self-concept and we don't do well. Each one of us sometimes suffers from illness. We are all growing old. And eventually we'll all die. Sometimes when we lose friends and family who are very dear to us, our heart is so broken, we wonder if we can ever be made whole again. At such times, we may turn inward with our sorrow and become isolated and more fragile. Like the woman in the mustard seed story, we forget we aren't alone in our sorrow. Each of us in this room has a tender, vulnerable place where we can feel our loneliness, our isolation, our loss, and our despair. Breathing in and out slowly, see if you can bring your awareness to the tender place inside your chest, where you're holding so much sorrow. Don't try to fix it and make it go away. Just be aware that it's there. Let go of your thoughts about your individual life, your life story. Maintain your awareness on your breathing. See if you can open up to our collective story. Is one as we support each other with compassion. In community, we can bear what is nearly impossible to bear alone. Now I invite you to think of someone you love who has passed from this life. See if you can picture your loved one in your mind's eye. If you hold any anger or resentment toward this person, try to let it go. Also ask them to forgive you for any hurt that you may have caused in the relationship. Now visualize a white light that will go directly from the center of your heart to the heart center of your loved one. With this light, send them the very strongest love and best wishes you can. Send them strength and success on their journey to awakening. And send it with generosity and open heart. Now come back to an awareness of your slow breathing as you become aware of the room and once more prepare to open your eyes. Be skeptical and say, well, I'm sending all of this love and positive energy, but will it be received by anyone? And who knows? None of us know whether it's received or not, but whether it is received or not is somehow irrelevant in some way, because just by sending that love and that support, there's a little healing that starts to happen in our own hearts. So at least we know that much from experience, and then the rest is in a realm that we can't know about as much yet. So I invite Ruth to come up. We're going to have a chance where we can talk about and share about some of the people that we've been close to and that we've loved. Many years ago, I read the mustard seed story in a book called The Compassionate Buddha, and I was so struck by that story because I thought it was such a fine parable, really, for the process of catharsis and comfort that you find in a small face-to-face community like ours. It's very this world, and that's why I like the appeal of it. And so I'm going to invite all of you now. They brought pictures, objects of loved ones, and in order to accommodate as many people as we can, we want you to limit yourself to just a few minutes. If you prefer, you can just come up and light a candle in silence, or just mention someone's name. So we'd like to invite you to come one by one, and if you don't have any photo or object, that's perfectly okay. Maybe you would like to tell us about someone. Then invite them. Your piano is here and matches.
I'm wearing this bathrobe that we bought for my father when we learned that his prostate cancer was advanced enough to that his days were numbered. And every time I put it on, nearly daily, it reminds me of him. And it reminds me, too, of my own mortality. There are certain things about it, there's a food stain here that reminds me as my father became more infirm and less steady, things like this food stain happen. So it's a reminder of that. It also reminds me of the things I got from my father, the things I learned. So I'm here today.
This is a pipe of my dead husband Don. He always had a pipe in his mouth. That was almost his trademark. You can find him in a crowd with a pipe. So I'd like to light a candle to his spirit. I think he's somewhere on Alpha Centauri.
I think the students about the loss of short-term and gain of long-term memory when you get old is quite true. I've been thinking lately of a kid who was really my first boyfriend and the very first very pure and shy love, and I still have some letters from him. The last letters I got from him from 1944. He was 2 years older than I, and we went to dancing school together, which was traditional in the state. And his father was I never met his father, he was a general of paratroopers, but his mother was a lovely, lovely lady, that's all I can say. And he, of course, had to go into the Air Force after he graduated from high school. And on the first time he was flying up, he was shot down. And he's 20, I was 18. And so I fight back in the watch. So I will put my the pictures of a group of us. Yeah.
I brought a photo of my mother, who in 17 days would have been died a year ago, 17 days from now. This was taken when she was 83 years old, and she was the most beautiful person I knew. She was beautiful at 83, and she was beautiful at 94. And she was my best friend, and I just thought I would bring that in and share. It's probably going to fall down. But thank you.
Another use for duct tape.
Yeah. And should I use the other table maybe?
Sure. Maybe I'm
I don't know, are you allowed to light two candles?
Sure.
I might have been going to the hospital all this week with a very dear friend of mine, whom I've known for 30 years, is in the hospital. She has a very rare cancer, and I think they're going to send her home today. She lives in Dodgeville, and you all know I have this awful driving phobia, so it's likely that when I see her today, this will probably be the last time I'll ever see her. When I first moved to Madison, she was the first person who came to me, and she was so sweet and so kind and gentle and friendly. And her dad owned a dairy farm in Dodgeville, and she took me home with her, and her family was so nice to me. It was something I hadn't expected, and we've stayed friends for always 30 years. And so I would like to light this for Marilyn. And even though she's not gone yet, she will be soon, and she'll always be in my heart.
Well, there's a little bit of a tradition brewing in my family. I tell my folks every year that there's this lady, Ruth Colvin, in my congregation, who's doing these All Souls Day services. So I asked my mother to write something about my mother. I'm not going to read the whole thing. She wrote 5 pages. But I'm going to remember my grandmother. She died at 95 years old in 1987. I went to her funeral in Minneapolis. And I remember her as a child. I lived in an old house in Williamsville on Ellicott Street, Williamsville, New York, Buffalo, New York. And I remember my grandmother visiting, and my parents would give her the master bedroom. And I remember one bright, I don't know where they were staying, but I don't remember. It was a bright, sunny morning, and I came in my grandmother's room, and I came to her bed. And she seemed so exotic, very exotic to me. She had a bright, ugly box person, and it was pink and blue, and had the colors and her texture. She wanted me to bring her purse. And I brought her a purse, and she opened it. She loved gum. And all of my childhood and adolescence, I was a huge gum chewer. I've stopped since. And I never even thought to ask my grandmother about Werther's brain bed. My grandmother was a very independent woman. She raised my mother. She worked as an accountant in a creamery. And she traveled. She traveled in groups to Europe. She was the first in her family to get an education. In an agricultural school, living in home ec, and she cooked meals. My mother always described cream, lots of cream. That's what my mother always described. She just says cream and butter. That's how she cooked. And she really would lay a nice table and all that. But she was pretty feisty and difficult. I don't think my mother really did not like her mother. She was just always interested in me. I began to realize as I got older that my mother, and I don't think she appreciated that this was a single woman. You know, what many, many years ago, when she was born in 1891, and from a Swedish farm family, the first girl to go off and get an education. She highly valued education. Of course, my mother got her degree, and she married a guy, my dad was a university professor, so probably sort of a... one thing I disagree about the idea of impermanence is that in a sense we have permanence in our memory. I have that permanence in memory of my grandma. And she loved hats, she loved to really dress, and she'd have to buy every season of the year a complete outfit or revamp her old outfit, and I think I threw away a lot of her hats that my mother gave me, but this is one I kept as a little candidate. So I'll put that. And then I have one picture I think I'll share. Because the three of us, I think I always remember my mother yelling at me a lot. And this was a picture of the three of us. And I think I look so cute in this picture. And they didn't want me to think that on the swing set, but the picture was got caught on the swing set. and then this was my mother and her mother, and I think my mother was really very angry when her mother would say that they were not sisters. She thought that this was very obnoxious. So I'll put that in. And I think I get a lot of my independence and my thinking around men. I don't like the question when people look at me and they ask me if I'm married. I think that they're asking me about status, they're asking me about things that are none of their business, and I think it's sort of like maybe the way my grandma was, because she was so independent. Such an independent woman. And I am like her that way.
Recently in a place where the people still plowed with wooden bottles behind horses in a small village in the Philippines, and it reminded me of my father, and I have a picture of him as a young boy behind a horse with a wooden plow. And the more I learn about my father, the more I understand my father. We had an extremely difficult relationship. A lot of that has been resolved. I think hopefully that has been resolved in my own thinking. So I'll leave a picture of my dad behind the plow, and here he is as a young man. And then the mother who raised him, we had a family of photographers, which is why I have him as a professional photographer. And then my great grandmother. So we'll have the three generations of this family whom I miss.
I am, and I'm 84, you think quite a bit about death, especially your own death. And as in the story of the mustard seed, we all want to find ways of coping with death, of consoling ourselves in facing this horrible event. And what I have done in a small way is, in the past few years, on my word processor file, I have entered the names of friends of mine, of people I've known quite well, who died in the last few years. There are names of very people there and so on. And there are 90 names listed there. And by listing these names and looking at these names, in a way, it gives me some consolation that I'm not alone. That this horrible event is inevitable and it's happened since human beings are creatures of one, and I will go through it myself. Now, more specifically, I'd like to mention two friends of mine whom I have known since the Depression days. One of them is called George Linden, and the other is called Al Jasnow. George Linden was a fellow who gave me my first mandolin lesson. He now lives in Berkeley. He has terminal prostate cancer, and he gives himself about 1 year to live. Al Jasnow, like George Lennon, all three of us are Jewish immigrant Russian families. We all lived through the Depression. We all became leftists. Jasnow, like myself, became a folk dancer. I taught him how to play the mandolin. We also became railway mail clerks together during the Depression. And he majored in psychology, and I majored in history. And he decided to enter a clinical psychology program sponsored by the Veterans Administration, which he ultimately got into. And one day we were working on a mailing rack together, throwing packages around, and out of nowhere, Al turned to me and said, "George, have you ever thought of entering the VA clinical psychology training program?" And I, being a history major, who had only one course in psychology, and I never dreamt of it. But he told me about it, and I began taking a bunch of courses in psychology, and I ultimately got into this program at the University of Michigan, where I met my beloved wife, Ruth, and everything worked out well. Al Jasnow died last year of stomach cancer. I'm sorry I didn't bring a little framed picture that I had written that had three poems on it. The first was a poem by William Blake. I thought of it when we sang that William Blake song, called The Fly. It's just about four lines. In essence, it deals with a fly on the wall, and someone casually hits it, and that's the end of the fly. And he says, that's pretty much like us. We are like the fly. And the second poem is by Annie Dillard, who describes a maple leaf seed falling to the ground, that even though it's falling and falling, it's still twirling. And I like to tell people who ask me, "George, how are you feeling?" And I said, well, I'm hanging on by my fingernails, but I'm letting them grow real long. The third was our well-known song, L'chaim, to life, L'chaim. And I am a worshiper of L'chaim. So I'm going to light a candle to my great friend, Al Jasmine. He not only was a psychotherapist, as I was, but he became an artist as well and wrote a very interesting book called Freud and Cézanne, Psychotherapy as Modern Art. So this is a candle to Al Jasmine.
Well, I'm going to light a candle to my mother and my father. I didn't even think about it until Karen got up, but my great-grandmother was really important in my life, too. And unfortunately, I don't have a picture of her, but I do have a picture of my husband, myself, and my mother and father on the wedding day, and my sister here, who is alive yet. My mother with Ben, and she really had a lot of fun with him. My father enjoyed the brief time that he got to know him. Mm-hmm. And I also have, my mother did a lot of quilting, and this was like the coat that she wore a lot. And I keep it, this is not quite my style. I was wearing this last night because I didn't want to have to carry it around. So I was wearing it, which was kind of a strange, you know. For her, her mother was ivory. I think it's plastic.
Cellular kind.
And but I just the thing of like here, this is this, you know, the traveling salesman and the ivory and the gypsies and much more interesting because there's also stories about people in the falling into the molasses bin, but that's another another time.
I'd like to remember today Sidney Mannering, a person who had been a prairie member years ago, and she was also a member of a book group that I've been in for 30 years, and we meet weekly, so believe me, these people are my sisters, Sidney Mannering. She had a rather lonely childhood and somewhat lonely life because after 5 years of marriage, her husband died, and she raised a single child by herself. She was a social worker, a very reliable, independent spirit whom we miss very, very much. And for a number of years, our group would celebrate birthdays and give each other presents. We stopped that. We just have cards now. But Sydney gave me this, which I think I very much like her. It's a plaque with kind of an embedded plant in clay. So I'd like to remember Sidney Mannering. She died last December 30th.
This is an elegy for a friend of mine named Marilyn, who committed suicide in 1991. And my only regret was that she called me to say goodbye, and I ironically was in the same state that she was in, rather than being where I normally live, but hadn't called her. I agreed with her reasons for committing suicide. I don't think she had any other option in mind, but my only regret is that I wasn't there to say goodbye to her. So this is an elegy. These are photographs that I did of a road in Kansas where I was living, and it was an elegy that I put together in remembrance of her, and I put it with a poem by a person named Liesel Mueller, which is called Spell for a Traveler. I think of my friend as traveling on. And the poem says, from the harbor of sleep, bring me the milk of childhood. From the ocean of silence, bring me a grain of salt. From the city of chances, bring me my lucky number. From the lookout of morning, bring me a speckled egg. From the palace of mirrors, send me my old lost self. From the hills of bones,
send me a drop of your blood. From the province of spring everlasting, bring back a rose that remains half open. From the dry dock of mute old men, bring back the miracle of a tear. From the delta of good intentions, bring back the seed that will change a life. From the fields of the dispossessed, bring me a donkey with Byzantine eyes. From the wells of the mad, bring me the bell and lantern of heaven. From the bay of forgetfulness, come back with my name. From the cave of despair, come back, come to me empty-handed. From the strait of narrow escapes, come back, come back.
I'll just say the names of three people I love that I lost. Magdalena Dichtal Pagziat, my grandmother, Walter Pichars, and Diane Pichars Schwartz. Two candles. One is for, on behalf of my naming myself, for Carol Dock, who was a prairie member and a friend of other people besides us, but she's the first person who really taught me a lot about life and dying. And I wrote a picture of Carol that was taken just a month before she died. And then the other candle I'd like to light for my children and myself and family members we've lost. One is my mother-in-law who died 6 years ago. She's part of she, and I have pictures of these people. One is my father-in-law, Clyde Irwin, who died 3 years ago. One is my husband and I, who died last February of last year, I should say. And the final one is my father-in-law who died this summer.
I knew we were going to do a service like this. The question that I heard was, who have you thought of during the last year, who you've lost? And so I'm going to talk about my Phoebe, who I probably didn't love, but I certainly responded. And I've got a picture I took with Mike and Linda at Island Woods. It was October of 96. And I also have a 100-millimeter graduate cylinder. I work in a family where both my parents studied or worked in different fields of science. When I was in junior high school, I thought I was going to be a world-famous woman scientist, knowing the good and evil and always protecting people from evil, working towards good. Then I got into college and I was going to go into pharmacy, and I didn't know whether I had what it took to do research. And I was going through a lot of job problems, and I was consulting with Mike about different ways I could go and, getting recommendations from him. And
just say a word about my mother. She was the second of eight children in a Swedish family out in South Dakota. And her mother sent her to college so she could make sure that her brother had enough to eat and clean house to live in. And this set her course as being a feminist, which I inherited.
No.
I think in 1927, when Lindbergh crossed the ocean and got an honorary degree from Wisconsin, my mother got a master's degree in education at the university and was always trying to get a better job, but she couldn't because, of course, she was married and married when you couldn't get a job. So that was another thing. So I just wanted to say, my mother was my support, and I don't feel sad about her passing because we all have to pass. But I've been thinking about it for a while. You know, what is it? And then somebody here was telling about their mother being a feminist and so forth. So that's what my mother is. And here I could light a candle. For Bertha Anglin Franklin.
I'd like to light a candle for our daughter Laura, who died in infancy and would have been 19 today. I didn't bring anything, I forgot. I was worried about Lisa's work on the presentation.
I want to remember two prairie members you all know. One is Odell Talia Farrell. This is a Christmas card that I received in 59 from him. And Hazel is, his wife is still alive, so this is for her too. She's not in very good shape. And they were very dear friends of mine. And one of the most tender kisses I ever had was from Sally. The other is Bessie Roberts, whom a lot of you remember. Is an early prairie member, and she was a wonderful person, great sense of humor, had loads of friends. But she, when she sent her yearly Christmas letter, she would include little sayings and poems and things that she had collected over the years. And I just want to read a couple of short ones here. That she wrote this time. A thing of beauty is a joy forever. Its loveliness increases. It will never pass into nothingness. That's peace. The gloom of the world is not a shadow. Behind it, yet within reach, is glory, is joy. There is a radiance and glory in the darkness. I greet you with profound esteem, that for you the day breaks and the shadows flee away. So I want to light a candle for them.
Thanksgiving almost a year ago, and I think his picture is a formal picture, but I think it expressed a lot about him. He's got a twinkle in his eye. He's always one who had a story for everyone, and kind of made everyone he knew feel important. He was one who was devoted to not only his family but to his work and his community. And he's got his little pin here that's a Golden Cake Kiwanis Club, and he had a circle of friends that he did lots of things with. After he had his formal career, he stayed very active in the community, both the church and other functions. And he also had a lady friend. He got to my mother died. He did a lot with. He was really devoted to her and her huge family. He always enjoyed them. And also the fact that he's dressed kind of formally was, I mean, this even though it's kind of a formal photo, it also showed how he was kind of in person. As he was not at all stuffy. He was very easygoing, but he always dressed very well. He enjoyed interacting with people. It's kind of his way of saying, you know, kind of, we're both important by, you know, dressing nicely. So I miss him.
Well, I'll contrast that with someone who's
never dressed formally.
That's what they do.
Yeah, this is Pudge Mullins. I lived with for 16 years, I believe, and had contact with him until he died, you know, about 20 years later. And this was taken about a year before he died. He was a terrible drunk, but he was a wonderful man in that he was, you'd come to his house and he was always glad to see you. He just emanated hospitality, and people flocked to him. You know, no matter how bad off he was, there were people that every time I went up there, somebody was either there or came while I was there. So this is, he also loved cats, and I have many pictures of him with cats. And on the other side is him and his daughter, who looks very much like him, and her two sons. And then I have one more thing. I just rented my house again because my tenant left and I got new tenants, and I was kind of cleaning around there, and way back in the closet up against the wall was a folder of things, and among them was this drawing that he had done, and he often did it on scratch paper, formalities, some old computer paper, and this was one of his drawings. So I light a candle for Fuzz Mullen.
I cry so much when I talk about my son, Austin, 13 and a half years ago. I would like to ask you, as members of my extended family, to look for Barry's picture each January 21st, the date of his birth, and April the 7th, the date of his death, because I always put his paper, his picture in the paper, and when you see it, I need a hug.
I've got a hug right now.
My mother and I brought a picture of my father and her husband, Walter Mallett. And we really love this picture because it gives me the essence of my dad. He's a very amiable man, and he's got a wonderful smile on his face. He was a businessman and was the vice president of finance for the Royal Insurance. But he had so many other interests and loves, and he's got a camera around his neck because he took photographs everywhere he went and of everybody. And he's also standing up addressing the crowd of people at a party. My father, who was actually started out as a very shy person, was great in, well, he was an actor. He did a lot of acting. He resided in John Lennon University. And was one of the charter members of theater, Madison Theater Guild. So he was always asking me. My last conversation I had with him, he was talking about directing a play where, you know, the more they were living. And this, or his return to the party in Montana, both are party people. So here he is. Oh, his name is Walter Mallett. Old Bud, as some of his friends and relatives call him. But I'm a mother.
This is kind of an odd thing to do because I'm going to do one for someone that's not here to do it for themselves. And that's the Georgies. Virginia and Dominic Georgie lost their son, older son, Dom, about 3 years ago, very horribly. And having lost a son myself, I know how that feels, although I didn't die like that. It's still very, very, very hard for the Jerry's brother and their son, Dom. So this is for young Dom.
I never met him, but I thought it was about him. Thank you all, and we invite you to come up after the service to look at all of these things and continue the sharing. kind of remembrances. I would like now, by tradition, to read the names of prairie people who have died, and Lisa will light a candle before you check one of them. Roland Parrish and Avis Parrish. Graham Cotley. Rebecca Clark. Lois Hagstrom. Jesse Roberts. Dorothy Weatherby. John Dorian. Les Lyons, Bill Caldwell, Marv Warfel, John Grindry, Mike Sheehan, Carol Dock, Doris Gaines, Odell Taliaferro, Judy Perlman, it makes it more fun. You kind of get in toward, you know, the later part of life. I turn to 50 and start thinking, you know, not going to go on forever. But you keep going, and it's never too late, because what you don't figure out this time, you're going to have to figure out next time. It's not like an option. I'm really tired. I've had enough of this. I think I just want to say, you die and you're done. With reincarnation, you're required to keep coming back. When you come
of learning. So it all matters, and it's exciting right up to the very end. And the last moment of life, it can be very profound, and it's a meaningful thing. So it just feels better. You might try it out.
I appreciate your remarks. I'd like to tell you a little story about reincarnation. There were two friends, Pat and Mike. They had a pact with each other. The one who dies first will communicate with the living person and tell what life is on the other side. So Mike was the first to die. One evening, Pat is lying in bed, and he hears his voice, and it's Mike. And Pat says, "Mike, how are things on the other side?" And Mike says, "Oh, things are terrific." And Pat says, "Well, what do you mean? How do you live there?" He says, "Well, you know, this is a typical day. I get up in the morning, and I have sex. I have lunch, and I have sex. And I have dinner, and I have sex." And Pat says, "Gee, I didn't know paradise was so wonderful." And Mike says, "Who's talking about paradise? I'm a jackrabbit in East Texas."
Universal has given Chairman Church there, and so we're visiting today.
We're kind of migrating from Pineries to Prairie.
Let's see, anyone else would like to introduce, announce? Okay. Announcements, Prairie announcements. Randy.
I'd just like to tell our congregation that we've entered into a relationship with James Reed this year in terms of our whole life sexuality training. They're going to conduct a group of classes this year, instead of the ninth grade class, because that's part of the whole curriculum that UU are ready to disseminate. The reason I'm announcing is because they're going to start it very soon, and we couldn't ask them to postpone it, basically because it's a rather extensive curriculum, about only 27 lessons, so it takes a good 6 or 7 months to really do justice to it. So rather than just ignore it and wait for next time, we thought we'd at least offer the opportunity to the young people who might want to participate this year. And then, of course, this year we'll educate ourselves and the congregation to be ready to be much more involved next year.
Which in the grade?
The grade? Oh, yeah. 7th through 9th would be this year. And we fantasy, that's fantasy, but the hope of UU is that there'll be a total curriculum. We'll have curriculum from kindergarten up through adult. And this year they've got the 7th through 9th grade, as I said, to the point of being able to teach it really well.
So are some prairies?
At this point, I don't know if anybody is going to do it, but everyone has been notified and we've talked about it. When the orientation is going to be this week and next week, because it's really on the quick side. So. But I did want to, again, begin the process here so you folks know what would be happening.
Is that something that current folks are going to be involved with, the 7th through 9th, James Reed?
I'm sorry, what do you mean by involved?
I'm not quite clear about the cooperation of people from Prairie.
Oh, the RE committee and myself have met with the RE, the trainers there. And I have gotten myself trained too, so I know what people are talking about. And depending on the youth Prairie's involvement, I'll be involved to a lesser or greater extent, depending on the number of kids and that kind of thing.
So if they're invited, yeah.
Yes.
We don't know if they'll do it. Okay.
In a nutshell,
they need to make a decision by?
In a couple of weeks.
Okay. Other Prairie announcements? Ken?
I'd like to thank everyone that's made a pledge, a financial pledge to Prairie so far for our coming year, and encourage all of you who have not yet made a pledge to bring your pledge to me as soon as you can.
Yeah, this is really short notice. We had a little communication problem with me with Community Midvale Lutheran. The Interfaith Hospitality Week for us is next week, starting the next Sunday. I have the sign-up sheet I stole from Parish Church before I came over here. And so we
borrowed it.
What?
You borrowed it.
I borrowed it and I will return it. But it's out here in the lobby, and I'll be out here in the lobby. So anybody who's interested, please sign up. And also, we've done such a wonderful job with personal item donations that we can take a break. And we don't need any more for a while. So thank you very much. And everybody sign up after service.
That's a great way for families to be involved in helping other people in the community.
Yeah. I just want to invite you all to my service next Sunday, entitled Thoughts Before Leaving the Faith, Before Joining the Peace Corps. I've also invited in their newsletter, the return of the Peace Corps volunteers. I've been told that they're a pretty active group, so I put an invitation in their newsletter. So it should be interesting. Maybe we'll get some additional visitors, and I hope to have some of their input into the service in terms of their experience. So please come to my service next time.
We are, I don't know the quite word honored, but we are really blessed here to have so many people within our congregation present services and all the time in preparation they take to stand before us on Sunday morning. So think of all that as you share together. Yeah.
Three
announcements.
One, very quick. I'm trying to sell my 1990
Toyota Corolla. So if anybody is really thinking about buying a wonderful used car with 59,000 miles on it, please see me. Announcement number two. If you read yesterday's Cap Times, you saw the piece in the paper about Tammy Baldwin and the 10 women who went to Jeremy's home about getting the ratification of the treaty, which would eliminate discrimination against women for the UN. 162 other nations have signed this. And if you were here last Sunday for the UN service, it was one of the things that I mentioned and that was in that handout that I gave you, where we have been battling this since 1979. It is absolutely ridiculous that the United States should refuse to sign a treaty against discrimination against women. So if UN funding meant anything to you, and if you were enthused or motivated by that service and by what you read in the paper yesterday, I would recommend that you write to Jesse Holmes and tell him how ridiculous you think this is. I mean, this is 20 years this has been in the Foreign Relations Committee, and they refused to let it out of committee for vote. That's okay, I'll get off. That's so the last announcement number two and a half. Does anybody have a Polaroid camera? Would you let me know? Because I want to get a Polaroid picture of my automobile so I and I need a Polaroid picture. Finally, the real Prairie News. Carl Wacko was kind enough to take the photos last week of the Sunday school classes with Tammy Baldwin. I will put this, there's a copy on the RE bulletin board, there's one downstairs, and I will put one up on the podium, and if any of you have your children in one of these pictures, if you would write your name on the picture itself, then I will have the negative developed for that picture and see that you get a copy of the picture with your child on it.
Okay, other prayer announcements? Betty?
Actually, is it prayer announcement?
I'm not cutting you off, we're just going in order, but go ahead.
this afternoon at 1 o'clock, at the park, the little Jewish temple.
James
Madison. James Madison Park. They're dedicating a memorial to the Spanish American fighters who were spent in the war in Spain.
Today.
And if you saw the paper yesterday, there was a picture of Clarence beside the monument. But we should all go to that and support it. At 1 o'clock.
Prairie Fire deadline is next Sunday, November 7th. Kate Hyber Cobb, our office administrator, has resigned. Her last deadline is November 6th. So we're in the process of looking at the office administrator position and seeing maybe tweak it a bit, see what we want to do from now on about the position. And Ken has his hand up.
Good.
About this topic?
Oh, okay.
But anyway, she's been working two half-time jobs, not making very much, and running hither and yon, and she's now going to be working for a internet-based company that makes signs, so she's doing some of her artwork and kind of straight 20 hours and more money per month, so we do miss her and thank her. So we are in flux, folks, so things may be a little more loose than usual. So, there will be another joint Thanksgiving service, Thanksgiving Eve service at First Society Wednesday the 24th. Again, we'll have a joint choir
And there'll be two choir rehearsals, one on Sunday, the 21st, and another on Wednesday, the 24th, before the service. So I know last year we had a very good turnout of this, and I encourage anyone who's interested to go, and especially those who want to sing in the choir, to look into that. We'll probably have more information in the choir. Ken.
For whoever would like it, I'd like them to have two free tickets to UW Travel on South African Safari. It's the 24th, Wednesday the 24th.
Other questions?